Welcome, everyone, to episode 393 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to get into some teams that are off to slow starts. We're going to see which ones are worth the concern and which ones are just early season, small sample size anomaly. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my, what can I even say, Mort? My very happy it's 2021 co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
Well, it's going okay for me personally. So I'm not that happy. So I just want to get into this real quickly.
For sure.
On New Year's Day, I lost a friend of mine, a fellow NBA fan. We lost because an avid listener of this podcast, a Danish sports journalist named Søren Olsen. Just a great human being. He's always supported me. Like when you and I, we also talk away from this podcast. You know, I've had some personal struggles over the past year, and like he knew that as well. He reached out several times, and he's been doing that for so long, and just supported, you know, us and my work as well. And his loss it's affected so many of us in the Danish basketball and sports community. It stings. It stings really badly. But one thing that he did during his life was add a lot of humor and positivity to basically everything that he did. He was a guy who just always found silver linings. And I think the best way to honor his memory is to start applying that logic. I think 2020 is an example where everybody got caught into this collective depression. And everyone was like very inclined to think negatively. And now in 2021, despite, you know, it started horribly with the loss of him, I'm going to pick up that lesson and try to look forward and try and find the silver lining, which also means just not following American news whatsoever, it seems. Yeah. But I also want to take this opportunity because one thing he did by being so warm and, you know, heartwarming all the time, and reaching out and doing all those things is, you know, I've learned that you can never really know what is going to happen. Like if I knew that he was going to pass, I of course would have, you know, told him that thank you for all the times he supported me and thank you for everything that he did and for the lessons he taught me directly or indirectly. And Brian, I want to extend that to you as well, because again, we never know where life takes us. And I want to say that you've also been there for me and for so long. We've had this show together. I always enjoy your company. I love you. You're my brother. And I don't ever want to left that being unsaid.
Well, right back at you, my man. And I'm so sorry to hear about your loss. My condolences go out to his family and the whole Danish basketball community at large. I went through something somewhat similar a few years ago where I had a friend pass of cancer who was way too young to be dying. And you're right, it's that like unsaid, you know, like you don't know when the last time is that you're going to speak to someone. Oh. And then you get the news and you're like, damn, like I wish I'd, you know, I was texting this guy a few days ago, we were like joking about concerts and like that's the last thing I'm going to say to him. But yeah, I'm sure he knows how many people he touched. And yeah, I mean, it's a certainly a bummer to start 2021 on a happy note. I will say two of my friends, my wife's friends from residency, who I won't name because I don't know if they're going public with the news yet, but we found out they are pregnant. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, so there is good news in the world, I promise.
Yeah.
And on that note, Mort, because he's going to need this, well, maybe not for a little while now that he's going to have a kid soon, but I bet it in a way to get his wife to bed, because his wife is a doctor. She's, you know, he's definitely the reacher. She's the settler in the situation. I bet he was using Manscaped products to do it. You like that transition? That transition is what you were saying earlier.
That's true.
So if you too want to get a full top to bottom trim, check out Manscaped. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com. That is 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code NBAPOD. Your balls will thank you.
You know what's great? Sean, he would have loved that because he was actually like an amateur stand-up comic. So the very fact that I'm talking about his passing and then we go straight into talking about balls, he would have had a field day. So that's actually perfect.
That's what I was hoping.
Yeah.
And speaking about balls, Mort, we're going to talk about some teams today who have gotten off sucking balls this season. Yeah. We have to start with the Golden State Warriors, who were being left for absolutely dead after the first two games of the season.
Yeah.
Because they got, they got annihilated. The Nets beat them by 26. The Bucks beat them by almost 40. They came back and beat the Bulls. It beat the Pistons, which is whoop-de-doo. Then they got smacked by the Blazers. Again, lost by 25. And then last night, as Stephen Curry had spent the past 2 weeks getting buried by Twitter for being overrated and being exposed and being not as good as Allen Iverson, which was an actual take that I saw from someone on Twitter this weekend, he went out and dropped 62, and they beat the Blazers 137-122. Yeah. So it turns out Stephen Curry is not dead. His corpse had been exhumed 5 games into the season, and now he is back to being the Stephen Curry we all know and love. But what's your take on these early season Warriors, Mort? Because we have, Draymond Green's only played 2 games. So I think, without him, those first two losses were honestly pretty understandable. But Kelly Oubre, The shooting struggles continue. 2 of 30 from three. How concerned should we be about these Warriors?
They won 3 of their last 4.
Yeah.
And in that process, Curry has averaged 38.8 points per game. So I don't think that's sustainable. But look, this was just a rough start to the season. Like you said, lost by 26 in the opener, 39 in the second one. After that, they started hitting. And then, they had the thing about Portland where they lost with 25. But here's the thing. Portland is really, really good.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, there's nothing shameful about losing to the Portland Trailblazers by 25 anymore. It's not. Like, they are legitimately good. So I really don't think that that's a problem. And then they came back and beat them last night by 15. So, this is the way the league is. I am not super worried. I do think that I'm being fair if I'm saying that the dynasty appears to be over. I don't think we're going to return to that level, but a playoff team, that wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. I do think it would help when Kelly Oubre learns to shoot again. that would be good. And sure, if Andrew Wiggins ever does learn to shoot, that would also be good. But no, I think this is a transition period, right? Like, when you look at what they were accustomed to, like Iggy and Steph and Clay and Draymond and KD, at least over the past 3 years before that. Going from that to Andrew Wiggins, Kelly Oubre playing major minutes, a rookie center, Eric Pascal coming off the bench. This is a brand new team. So right. I still think they're trying to figure each other's roles out, and they're pivoting as an NBA organization into something else than they were used to, and that's going to take time.
Yeah, so what do you chalk Kelly Oubre's struggles up to? Because I promise for, people who weren't really watching him in Washington or Phoenix before he came to Golden State, he's not this bad. Like, Kelly Oubre was actually very good for most of last season. So is it just, a small sample size thing, him getting his bearings on a new team, trying to figure it out? Or are there actual causes for concern about his fit in Golden State?
We're 6 games into the season. I don't want to, go that far yet and say that it's because the system doesn't fit him. I think right now he's just not hitting shots, to be honest with you. And that's a problem. Like, he's not hitting the outside shots whatsoever. I think he's almost hitting 50% of his twos. That's something. I think for him, it has to be a question of possibly scaling back what he's doing from long range. I mean, he's taking 5 shots per game from outside. He's not hitting anything. He's 2 of 30. So I think over the next couple of games, it's just a matter of pivoting into becoming more of an interior player, more of a driver, a slasher, getting to the free throw line. Like, that seems to always be the recipe for health, right? Like, in going back to, if you're in a shooting slump and you come back from it, it's by going to the free throw line. You need to see that ball go through the basket a little bit more. And when that happens, that confidence level suddenly starts to shoot up. And maybe that's enough for him. I don't know. But we're 6 games into the season. I'm not ready to say it's a system problem yet.
Yeah. I mean, there have been some clips circulating on Twitter where he'll drive and, like, not even look to pass. And that's definitely not great. But again, you know, he's not a prolific passer by any means. He set a career high with 1.5 assists per game last season. But he's not Hassan Whiteside either, where just like a complete black hole. The second he touches the ball, it's not going anywhere else. So I would think as he gets more comfortable with his teammates, and remember, he was, you know, when was he traded? Like a month ago, 2 months ago at this point? So he just hasn't had a ton of time with these guys. As he gets more familiar with the system, it would not surprise me to see him bounce back, because no, I don't expect him to continue shooting 6.7% from 3-point range this year. But I think you said it well, Mort. Like, the dynasty is definitely over until Klay Thompson returns, and, you know, if he is anywhere close to his former self, which we can't assume coming off of back-to-back major injuries like that.
Why can't we assume that? Because apparently, you know, all of NBA Twitter and everyone kind of expected KD to come back fully healthy, despite there being only one case in NBA history that was going to happen. And that was Dominique, like 30 years ago. But somehow with Klay and everyone else, like, oh, their careers are over. But with KD, everyone's like, no, that dude is fine. He'll be an MVP. What?
I was never on the KD is definitely going to be fine.
I know. You and I were actually pretty logical about it, I think, in our own defense. And hey, look, I'm glad to be wrong, but I'm just saying, like, that makes no sense. If we're giving KD that benefit of doubt and everyone's like, hey, KD's going to win the MVP, why are we basically, you know, laying out the jersey for Klay and going, oh, your career is over? Like, we're planning the jersey retirement.
Klay had 2 injuries instead of 1? I don't know. But
yeah, that's true. But, like, it's the ACL. Like, people seem to get over those now compared to, like, 10 years ago.
And John Wall, if you look at him, it's early, but he's looking good too. So, again, I'm not saying Klay is definitely not going to be back to his former self, but we can at least hope that he is, but you can't assume anything, to say the least, and we're not going to see it till next year anyway. So I think it's fair to say that their margin of error is much thinner this year.
And I agree with you, by the way, on Klay.
Yeah. But, like, without Klay, when, you know, Draymond misses those first 2 games, their first 4 games, I should say, you know, I'm not surprised they got rocked. He is the bedrock of their defense. He's the one who needs to set the tone on that end of the floor. So him being back in the fold now, and he's only played 45 minutes in total. It's not even like he's, you know, fully up to speed yet. I think as he, you know, he scored
one point.
Yeah, so as he gets, you know, I think conditioning was an issue from him, if I've read those quotes from Steve Kerr correctly. So
wait, are you telling me that Draymond Green has conditioning issues?
He's got to work himself out after not playing last season as well. So now that he remembers he actually has to play basketball again, he will get up to speed in due time. I think it's fair to say when, you know, you already lost Marquese Chris for the year, Klay's gone for the year, the bench is just not what it once was in the dynasty days. So they're going to need more from their starters. And when guys like Oubre are shooting so poorly for 3, or Wiggins is under 40% from the field and he's attempting 16 shots a game, yeah, this is not a top four team in the West, but it's also not, you know, I saw someone compare this team other than Steph to the Process Sixers. And I'm like, what effing team were you watching in the mid-2010s if you think this is the Process Sixers? Like, this team is still a play-in tournament caliber team.
Right. Like, I attended a game during the very early Process Sixers in 2014. And, like, that was a G League roster.
Yeah. Brett Brown literally had to, like, meet his point guard 2 hours before the game and be like, all right, cool, go play 35 minutes. Like, there is still a good amount of talent on this roster, on the starting five in particular. It's just the bench is pretty thin. So if, you know, if Curry goes down, they're totally screwed. I'll give you that. But,
well, no, because according to NBA Twitter, he's bad. Right? So that would make them better.
He got exposed.
He's not a real GOAT like Iverson.
Like, how did we get from this guy was arguably the most influential talent of the last half decade other than LeBron to this guy is not that good and we're going to completely rewrite his career trajectory?
Like, it's ridiculous.
It's almost like shooting is a very important skill, and if you have the best shooter in NBA history, sure, he's not going to single-handedly lift this team to the NBA title like LeBron did or almost did with the 2007 Cavs, but Steph is still really good, guys. Like, let's not bury him because he got off to a slow start and the Warriors got off to a slow start.
Right. In terms of 62-pointer was a signal.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Like, in terms of concern of the teams we're about to talk about, the Warriors are not at the top of my list.
Right. Oh, boy. Yeah. Real GOAT like Iverson. My God, that has to be like a top 10 dumb thing to say on NBA Twitter ever. Like, it's right up there.
I was like off Twitter that day, and then I saw that. I was like, I gotta log back off. This was, oh, man. All right, so let's go into a team that I am a bit more concerned about, Mort. The Toronto Raptors. We knew it was going to be an adjustment period for them at losing Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka in free agency. You know, we warned that, like, even though those guys don't have massive per-game stats, they were very, very important, especially defensively, to what the Raptors did. Turns out the offense has been the bigger concern, as they are averaging only 104.4 points per game. That is 27th. In the league so far, their offensive rating, 101.5 per 100 possessions, dead last in the league. Where's your concern level with Pascal Siakam, who is shooting 39.4% from the field and 28% from three-point range this season?
Well, so the Rockets have less life in their offense than actual Raptors in this day and age. That's where we are, because it's that bad. It's not just Pascal, though. I know he's taking, like, a lot of the blame right now. But if you go just top to bottom in terms of the six guys that are playing the most minutes on the team, that's Kyle Lowry, it's OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, Siakam, and Norman Powell. Okay, those are the top five. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go with Aaron Baines at six, okay. Let me go with the field goal percentages. And I know field goal percentage is outdated, but let's just go with it. Mm-hmm. Kyle Lowry, 40.8%. OG Anunoby, 41.7%. Van Vliet, 39.5%. Siakam, 39.4%. Norman Powell, 32.6%. And then Aaron Baines comes in at a respectable 44.7%. That is trash, like, all over. And it is just, look, it could be early season, small sample size. So I'm not really ready to like, completely disown them, but that has been one of the worst offensive productions I have seen from the early going of a team that was that good the year before without having lost, you know, their primary guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they even did that the year before, and they responded beautifully. So I'm a little bit nervous about Siakam because I thought he would be taking on more of a role. And instead, it seems like he's playing more passively. then there was that weird sort of suspension kind of thing that we still haven't heard a ton about, if I'm not mistaken. Like,
oh yeah,
yeah.
I guess he walked off the court early in the loss to the Sixers, and then they sent a message by suspending him. It was for
Do
the
you
game.
Buy that?
I mean, I think they were playing the Knicks in that next game, so I wonder what they would have done if they were playing the Suns Celtics. Or the Clippers or the Lakers, someone like that, where they, you know, they might have thought this Knicks win was a gimme, which it turned out to be. I mean, maybe it is just a matter of setting culture, and in which case, you know, there are no exceptions even for the star players. You're setting expectations for this is what we can and cannot do. And if even if you are, you know, our max guy, the guy we are ostensibly building around, we're not going to tolerate it.
Fair. If that is the case, I think that was an overreaction. I probably would just have gone the route of saying, you know what, you're just coming off the bench, not missing the entire game.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that sends a message out. But you know what? Semantics. Overall, I am slightly worried just given how he's looked out there. It seems like he's a little bit more passive. But again, it could be just him working his way in. It's such a small sample size. We don't really know. But no, I'm slightly concerned at this point. But if this production is the same a month from now, I will be increasing my warning levels from like orange to red.
Yeah. I know there's been a lot of concern from Raptors Twitter in particular about the minutes with Kyle Lowry off the court. Like the offense have just ground to a complete halt, and I'm trying to pull up the exact stats here, so give me a few minutes before I get those. But in the meantime, like, do you think the Raptors do they need another ball handler? Can Van Vliet be that guy whenever Lowry isn't on the court? Or like, what's going on in these non-Lowry minutes?
Yeah, so I haven't I haven't looked closely at the non-Lowry minutes and gone in with the microscope. I just haven't. But I will say this, based on who Fred is as a player and what we saw last year, yeah, he should definitely be able to do that. I mean, this was a guy who could set up the offense, could get into the teeth of the defense and dish off, or score himself. Yes, I think he is the secondary ball handler, and I don't think it's close. I mean, he's definitely capable. And up to my Siakam would be the tertiary. So I think they have enough just in terms of like the ball handling responsibilities. That's not the concern to me. It's just getting good shots, I think. Like, they're rushing a little bit and they're not that acclimated. I think maybe they had this outlet in Marc Gasol where if he was there and the offense was in need of something, they could always pass it to him because they knew he would make a really good call. Like, he was a very steady presence on the floor. And even Serge Ibaka as well, because when you have a guy who's near 7 feet tall, who can drain threes, and you know can drive the ball as well, and actually has a pretty decent handle when you consider his size, those are suddenly two major options you're taking off the floor and taking off the whole thing. And now you're trying to replace it with Chris Boucher, who I told you would play a good role and would be good, and here we are. He's doing beautifully. He's been the Raptors' best player in this season so far, but it's not Mark and it's not Serge. So you'll need to figure out, it's kind of like the Warriors situation. Okay, we have new faces here with more responsibility. How do we manage that? How do we group this together to a product that actually works? So I think they're still in the lab, as they like to say. Figuring out what's the right play.
That is Doc Rivers' favorite term, if I've learned anything about him through his short tenure as a Sixers coach.
I have one question for you, though.
Yeah.
Because let's say the Raptors just keep losing, okay? I don't think they will. But let's say it happens. Do you, at the trade deadline, see what you can get from Chris Boucher if he keeps doing this? because you know you're going into a rebuild, and you also know that he's super cheap. Right. I mean, $6.5 million this year and $7 million next year. Like, that's a really low contract for his current production. If he keeps that up, you have a ton of contenders who would be able to take that money on and, like, give you an expiring whatever back, plus maybe a pick or two. Like, would you consider that, or would you keep him around?
I have a much spicier trade deadline question that I will ask you in a minute. Yeah, get ready. But just to circle back on the Kyle Lowry on-off, with him on, they are averaging 106.9 per 100. With him off the court, it's only been 53 minutes so far, so not a huge sample size. 77.5 points per 100 possessions.
No, that's like 1998, 1999 Chicago Bulls numbers. Oh my God. Yeah.
The Oklahoma City Thunder are last of the league in terms of offensive rating right now at 101.0. So,
oh God.
And last year the Warriors were last at 104.4. So,
yeah.
So yes, yeah. Raptors fans are very right to be highlighting the non-Lowry minutes as a problem offensively.
Oh my. Well, here's the thing. Kyle Lowry is good. Can we also talk about that? Because it does seem like every year Twitter gets a little bit down on Lowry. Like, and, oh, he's just another guy.
And Raptors Twitter gets extremely defensive over that, or over him whenever that happens. Yeah. But yes, Kyle Lowry is good. Yeah. And that, I'll answer your Boucher question in a second, but that leads me to my trade deadline question. Of if the Raptors keep losing, Kyle Lowry's on an expiring contract.
Yeah,
when do we start to consider a Kyle Lowry trade?
So it really depends, right? Because would Raptors Twitter torch the city of Toronto if that happened?
Yes, but that doesn't mean Masai shouldn't do it.
Well, you're right. But yeah. I have a feeling that he might keep him around as like that franchise dude that's just there until he doesn't want to be there anymore.
Right.
But no, yeah, they probably should. The question is, like, what can you get in the trade market that makes the sacrifice of Lowry worth it? Are you going to get something back that is even more valuable down the line than what Kyle gives you right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. I think you would have to find a contender that, or like a hopeful, a title hopeful, I guess would be the better phrase, where, you know, naturally he's come up as a Sixers trade target. I don't think the Sixers would trade Ben Simmons for him.
No, God, no.
I hope not.
No.
But if you could get, like, I think Matisse would be very gettable at this point. So if you could get, I mean, I think it's tough to make it work salary-wise without including Tobias. Like, you would have to combine Danny Green, Mike Scott, Matisse, and something else probably otherwise. So that's one option. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it would be look at that next tier, like below Lakers, Clippers. You know, I don't think the Nuggets are necessarily in need of a point guard. We'll see with Boston and where Kemba's knee is. Like, maybe Miami.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess Miami, I'm sitting here going through the teams. Yeah, I guess Miami would make more sense. Like, he would be a Miami player, right?
I think so, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they're scared about how much Duncan Robinson's going to get paid this summer,
include him in a trade.
You know, that's a possibility. Now, I think going back to your point about, you know, Masai and Raptors Twitter, Raptors Twitter would definitely be furious if they trade Kyle Lowry. Because you're right, he is that last piece of the title team, or the last big piece of that title team who they just absolutely revere. Like, it seems like Raptors Twitter has done a complete heel turn on Pascal, which I am very surprised by.
Yeah, they have. I will say this, though. Like, a lot of Raptors beat writers are weirded out by that. So it's they're pushing back a little bit, like, hey, guys, remember, Pascal is really good.
Right. You guys spent like 2 years defending him. Don't be mad after six bad games.
Right. I even pitched a trade idea a year or so ago with, what was it, D'Angelo Russell, and even if the Warriors won the number one pick.
Oh, yeah.
And Raptors Twitter got on my ass. ass. Like, no, we would never give up Pascal for D'Angelo Russell in the number one pick. We would never. And now they're like, he's got his extension. He's not playing well. Wave him.
What? Right. Yeah. So I think Masai and any general manager, not just Masai, but like you can't be concerned about what Twitter thinks in general, because you're going to make moves that are sometimes unpopular, and you just have to believe in what you're doing.
Well, it wasn't just Twitter, to be fair. It was like just the Raptors fan base.
Right. Yeah. And you, I mean, again, you have to like remove emotion from the equation here. Yes, Kyle Lowry is this, you know, franchise icon at this point. And if Kyle Lowry has given you no indication that he wants to leave and that he's willing to re-sign next summer at a price that you both consider fair, then cool, don't trade him. Definitely don't. But if Kyle Lowry is like signaling behind the scenes that he wants another chance to win a ring and he's considering leaving this summer and signing with another contender, that's when you have to actually consider trading him. Because if you trade him, whichever team acquires him will get his bird rights, can go over the cap to re-sign him. Like, just because he's an unrestricted free agent doesn't mean there's no value in trading for him. Also, you get him this year. So, you know, if you're a Miami or a Philly and you identify that as a potential need going into the playoffs, you would be willing to sacrifice something. Maybe not, you know, you're not going to give up Bam Adebayo or Ben Simmons for him, but you might be willing to give up a young prospect, a pick, salary matching, whatever. So I just think it's something to put on the back of your mind for now, where I don't think they're going to trade Kyle Lowry next week. They're definitely going to give this thing time to, you know, right the ship and see if they can get Pascal going. And again, if you get those non-Lowry minutes, the solution is not more of them. But going back to your Boucher question, I mean, I wonder, why do you think, like, he didn't play really at all in the loss to Philly where they were leading for most of the game. He played only 4 minutes, didn't score a single time, he had 2 fouls. So, I mean, maybe Nick Nurse thought he was just getting in foul trouble right away. But, like, do you think they just need to lean on him even more?
Yes. So I didn't catch the Philly game, but I did see the Raptors reaction on Twitter as well.
Ooh, it was brutal.
but also to him not playing. Because he'd just come off, like, let me just look it up. It was something ridiculous.
Yeah, 22 points, 10 rebounds, 7 blocks.
There we go. Spurs. Yeah, exactly. And 3 threes as well.
Yeah.
It was like a huge game. And then 3 days later, he didn't even play 5 minutes against Philly, which just seemed odd. And then he's been back in the rotation. So I don't know if it was like an injury question. Like, again, I didn't catch the game. I just saw the reaction to it. But no, I would lean on him. He's good. Like, he's a extremely talented shot blocker. He's an active rebounder. He can hit the three. He's active around the basket. He's always had a very good free throw percentage, which again shows indication as a shooter. And this year in particular, he's just been rock solid. Like, he's been their best player as far as I'm concerned. Low turnover as well. Like, he's been good. He's been legitimately good. I would lean on him, see what they have. The thing is, though, and that's why I bring it up in terms of him as a trade candidate, he'll be 28 in a week, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So you also have to wonder how much upside is there long-term. Like, if you keep him around until he's 30 or 31, and like you keep re-signing him, his trade value is also going to diminish. So right now, you know, at age 27, 28, where you're in the smack dab middle of your prime, that would interest teams that are trying to win right now, I would assume. So maybe try to go for that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be a question of whether teams buy him as a legitimate difference maker, or if they want to see it in a larger sample size. Of course, like, they wouldn't make this move until closer to the deadline anyway.
Exactly, right. Yeah, they wouldn't be doing it tomorrow. No.
Yeah. But I'm wondering if it's more like a Christian Wood thing, where even in this small sample size, you don't totally buy it, which is why Christian Wood got far less than, you know, if teams could redo the offseason right now, Christian Wood's getting $20 million a year easily.
Right.
But they just didn't buy it because it was on a bad Pistons team. Boucher on this Raptors team, knowing that he's never put up numbers like this before, I wonder if they want to see a full season, and then maybe his trade deadline or his trade value would actually be higher this offseason or heading into next trade deadline. But it's a good thought. I mean, it's definitely an option. Like, if they trade Lowry, that at least signals you're going into some version of a rebuild. So you might as well start stripping down parts that aren't Siakam, Fred VanVleet, and OG.
Like, I was thinking Chris Boucher could be an interesting trade candidate for the Lakers if they're willing to give up Taylor Horton Tucker.
They should be.
Yeah, the Lakers fan base would probably riot, but like you said, fans can't really be dictating terms, but I think that would be an interesting thing because now you would have, if you're the Raptors, two very young defensive studs in OG and Talen Horton-Tucker, and then you can kind of start over from there, and then whatever you get back in a potential Lowry trade, okay. And then you need to figure out what to do with Siakam. Like, if he keeps struggling, his trade value is going to go real low. But I don't anticipate that being the case, though. I do think that's a weird situation as well, because he's like 27 or something, right?
Yeah.
26, 27. He's going to be 27 on April 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in that weird time as well, where he's not super young, and you have to figure out what the long-term play is.
Yeah. Yeah, in general, I think there are a lot of valid questions about the Raptors' long-term future here. And we'll see how the next few months shake out. But, you can only hope they right the ship soon, or that chatter is only going to get louder.
Right. Oh, man, I desperately wanted Siakam as, like, the long-term Draymond Green replacement. But that was under, like, the old Golden State regime, where it was, like, Steph and Clay, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would have been good. With no Clay, it's just lost its luster.
All right, let's pivot more. Since we brought up the Miami Heat, let's go into them, because they have also gotten off to a somewhat slow start. Only 5 games, and they're playing the Thunder tonight. So by the time you're listening to this, there's a very good chance they're 3-3, and overreaction is unwarranted. But they got absolutely annihilated by the Bucks in that record-setting performance. They came back and beat the Bucks a day later without Jimmy Butler, which is impressive. But they've also lost to the Dallas Mavericks and Orlando Magic. And the Mavericks, it wasn't a high-scoring game. It's not like Luka dazzled them and put up 130. They lost 93-83. Jimmy Butler has been banged up. He's got the ankle injury. He's missed 2 games so far. Where are you in terms of panic on the Heat?
So on the warning scale, what is the least alarming color? Is that green?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm green.
Oh, okay.
It's the Heat. They'll figure it out.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I'm not much more concerned. I'm definitely more concerned about the Raptors and then the next 2 teams that we'll discuss. The Heat are coming off one of the shortest off seasons in NBA history, next to the Lakers, who had the shortest. The Heat had, I think, 1 extra day, so congratulations. Jimmy Butler getting hurt this early definitely doesn't help. What do you think of, they've had Tyler Hero start all 5 games so far at quote-unquote point guard. What do you think of that experiment?
He's been good. Not in terms of running the offense in this, in the way that you want a traditional point guard, but I don't think that's the point either. Mm-hmm. I think the ball goes through Bam Adebayo so often, and when Jimmy's healthy, obviously Jimmy, that you kind of just want Tyler to run off of screens and like get shots in the flow of the offense. And he's done that. So I hope he returns a little bit to form on his threes. He's only been shooting 33%. But no, he's like, we're talking about a guy right now that's averaging 16 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists at the age of 21, and is looking like the NBA player that he was supposed to be. I can't complain about that. I think it's not gonna be this second year jump that's gonna stand out. I think it's gonna be the third year for him, where he trots out and becomes this 22, 23 point player. I don't think that's going to happen this year, but the point guard experiment, or so to say, I don't even look at it that way. I just look at it just like the Lakers are starting their guys. Like, usually, that, well, this not this year. This year they're starting Schroeder, but last year when it was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Danny Green, right? Those mm-hmm. were the two.
Mm-hmm.
It's slightly similar in that vein, I think.
Yeah. No, it, like, you're saying Jimmy Butler is effectively the point guard. So Tyler Hero is, like, the nominal point guard, but really secondary ball handler in that starting
right. game. That was the case last year, too. And let's not also forget that Goran Dragic is coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's actually leading the team in the system, just now realizing. But he's a point guard. Like, right. he can handle the offense, he can run it. He plays, well, he actually plays a little bit less than I thought. He's only playing 23 and a half minutes. Doesn't, like, it feels like he's on the court whenever you watch him play, like, a lot. But apparently it's less than a half, which makes his stat line even more impressive. But he just dominates the ball in a good way, not in a bad way. When he's on, he's the guy. Like, he gets the rock, he sets everything up, he's the one who communicates. Like, I don't think I've seen, at least not a lot of possessions, if any, where Dragic and Hero shared the court, and Hero was the guy who set everything up. At least I don't remember that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're easing a lot of these guys into the season. Like, Tyler Hero is leading the team with 33 minutes per game. Bam Adebayo is second at 32, and no one else is above 30. So I think that's definitely part of Dragic in particular, who had the foot injury and missed mm-hmm. most of the finals. I'm sure they are being extra cautious with him because right. their eyes are clearly on a much bigger prize, and it is not early regular season wins. I don't think they particularly care about playoff seeding. They proved last year they're fine with whatever matchup they get.
Agreed.
Our friend Nikias Duncan, who writes for Basketball News, wrote an article on the Hero as point guard thing, and you know, I thought it was really good. He made the point, like, why not push your young guys and test their limits and see how far they can go, even if it comes at the expense of a couple regular season wins, or even if your net rating isn't as good as it could be. Like, you know what Goran Dragic is bringing to the table. Tyler right. Hero is still so young that you don't. Like, you know Tyler Hero is a good shooter. You know he can create for himself off the dribble. What can he do for teammates? Can he
right.
can he be that secondary ball handler? Can you trust him with running more of the offense in that starting lineup next to Jimmy Butler? Let's find out now, early in the season, when you still got plenty of time between now and the playoffs to make tweaks if you have to.
Yeah.
And if you can teach him, like, if you get him those reps and he improves throughout the season, then he's going to be that much more dangerous when the playoffs roll around. So I actually, yeah. like, it's not what I would expect the Heat to do. Like, I would think Dragic is going to have a much bigger role when the games actually matter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is what all teams should do, whether you're a contender or a bad team. Like, you should give your guys a long leash whenever you can and kind of figure out what they can and can't do, because that's yeah. the only way you're going to know.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing the Bulls do the same thing with Kobe right now. Right now. And that is going, I want to say, significantly worse than it is in Miami. So I agree with Nikias' overall point, but I think I want to really hammer home the point that he makes about you can always make tweaks later. I think it's extremely important that if you recognize that a certain guy just has zero point guard skills and you keep insisting on, you know, trotting him out there in that position, mm-hmm. then you also need to have the self-awareness to scale back and go, okay, this isn't working. Like, we've spent 40 games doing something, it's not working. I'm not there yet. Like, the Bulls have played 7 games and, like, the Heat are at 5. It's way too soon. Like, I can give them more time. I mean, even though Kobe White's experiment as point guard has been just atrocious, Heroes has at least given the grounds that he's okay at it. Like, he can run a pick and roll. You know, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that in the sense of him being a traditional point guard, like a Goran Dragic, like a Chris Paul, like those guys,
yeah.
in terms of being able to see, have a, like, an elite court vision and setting up teammates and, you know, he's not that. And that's right. okay. What is really interesting is seeing the benefits that can come later. So, you know, coincidentally, going back to a different Chicago Bulls player, remember when Zach LaVine was in Minnesota? And they actually started him point guard during his mm-hmm. rookie year. Mm-hmm. Like he's credited that numerous times, saying, you know, I got better as a decision maker, I got better as a ball handler. Granted, he's not like an above average ball handler or decision maker in terms of passing even now, but then imagine how bad he would have been if he hadn't gone through that experience. Right. And I think that's the point of it, is like, if you can give your on-ball shooting guards more time to actually play a position where you need to balance, you know, sharing, timing, score, all those things, it gives them a long-term advantage for when they move back to being primarily off the ball. And I have to assume that's the same thing the Bulls are doing with Coby White, and I have to assume this is what the Heat are doing with Tyler Herro as well.
Yeah, I think they're just, again, trying to stretch his skill set and see, like, the ball is going to be in Jimmy Butler's hands and Goran Dragic's hands in the playoffs. They're not going to rely on Tyler Herro as their primary creator, but can they steal a couple minutes? Where, you know, if Jimmy's in foul trouble, if Goran's in foul trouble, if one of those guys get hurt, like, he could be your plan C or D, you know. Right. Otherwise, you're relying on Kendrick Nunn again, which it seems like he has fallen out of favor with the coaching staff. So, I like what they're doing. You know, I think it's safe to say that Jimmy Butler is not going to continue averaging 8 points a game on 32% shooting. So like you, I'm not especially concerned with Miami. But how much do you think they miss Jay Crowder before we move on from them?
You're always going to miss a two-way wing. Of course you are. When you can hit shots, especially from deep, and you can participate defensively and be an asset defensively, rather, those are huge, huge components. And if you lose those, you are going to miss the guy who isn't there anymore. That is absolutely a thing. And Andre Iguodala is really showing his age offensively. Mm-hmm. I did not like that contract, and this is why I think he's, you know, defensively he's still got something to it, and he can still pass the ball, but my God, I mean, there are times when he can barely get a shot up.
Yeah. And I expected Mo Harkless to be a bigger part of this rotation. He really has not been so far.
And Kendrick Nunn has also played just 14 minutes a game.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like they're leaning on Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, Goran Dragic as their main three guys off the bench, which I get it. Cool. And Avery Bradley's been good so far.
He's been Celtics Avery Bradley.
Yeah, he's just very good. We thought he would be a nice addition to that Heat roster, and he seems like the perfect type of Heat player, and he has panned out so far. But yeah, I do worry slightly, you know, because Jay Crowder was just so important to them last year in that playoff run, I worry a bit about their forward depth in particular. But again, it's early.
Well, I have a take there. I actually have a take. I would like to see more Chris Silva.
How did I not see that coming?
No, he's a good shot blocker. He's a very good rebounder. He's active. Why not? Give him a shot.
It would not surprise me if they do at some point this season. All right, let's go to the Denver Nuggets, Mort. Coming off of a run to the Western Conference Finals, the Denver Nuggets are 2-4. I think two of their losses are pretty easily explainable. Clippers, fine. Phoenix Suns, it was a 3-point loss. Great. Their only wins have come against a shorthanded Houston Rockets team and a Minnesota Timberwolves team without Karl Anthony Towns. They've also lost two games to the Sacramento Kings. And who do we scapegoat now that Nikola Jokic isn't fat and is actually averaging a triple-double?
Well, I'm not allowed to say anything, apparently, because, you know, if I make the suggestion that Denver has lost a lot of talent over the last year, I'm getting pushback from Nuggets guys, basically saying, no, that's not true. That's not a concern. So are we just playing? Like, are we just playing that it doesn't matter when you lose both Malik Beasley and Jeremy Grant and you only replace it with Jamichael Green?
Facundo Campazzo, how dare you?
That's true. Campazzo is there. But, like, look, again, the Nuggets over the past calendar year has lost a significant portion of talent that they didn't get in return. They started hyping up Keita Bates' job when they when they traded for him. Well, that dude's not there anymore. So, and he barely didn't play, right? Unless I'm mistaken, like, he wasn't that. So, where are you getting your depth? Like, Gary Harris right now, I'm so sorry to say this because I like Gary Harris. I really do. And everything we hear about him privately as a teammate and as a human being is outstanding. But Gary Harris right now, as of this moment, is not even an NBA rotational player.
He is shooting 36.5% overall and 12.5% from deep, 3 of 24, doing Kelly Oubre proud.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, his defense, there are still moments where you can see that that's on point, but you know he's giving you so little in every other major statistical category as well. 7.7 points in total, but that's in 31 minutes of play. 1.7 rebounds, 1.3 assists. There's just, he's not giving you enough, and I think it's because he's just been injured for so long, he doesn't have his legs. And that sucks, because Harris was good, and I desperately want to eat my words next week when we record, because for him to have, like, huge bounce-back games, but the Nuggets are in need of talent. They're in need of upgrade. Like, they had to re-sign a 36-year-old Paul Millsap, right?
Yeah.
Like, Jamichael Green, okay, he's been fine, I guess. Like, he's shot well. But overall, this team feels like they're a player or two away.
Yeah, and I mean, if Gary Harris rounds back into form, if Will Barton rounds back into form, he's only shooting 35.9% from the field.
Right.
But yeah, it feels very top-heavy where, I mean, Jokic is playing phenomenally. Jamal Murray is playing very well, too. I mean, this is the Jamal Murray from the bubble. He's averaging 24 a game, shooting almost 50 from the field, 40.5% from three on 7.4 attempts per game. Michael Porter Jr. in a much bigger role this year, averaging almost 20 points and 7 rebounds a game, assuming he can stay away from COVID-positive people, which is a big leap for an anti-vaxxer. But after that, Paul Millsap is their fourth leading scorer. And, you know, Monte Morris is doing Monte Morris things off the bench and averaging 12 points, which is great. But, yeah, Will Barton and Gary Harris in particular are struggling. I mean, Campacho just hasn't played a ton. Maybe he'll get worked more into the rotation as the year goes on. But I'm with you. I mean, this feels similar to what we were saying kind of about the Warriors.
Right.
Where it's like, I really like the top five or six guys, and after that, I get very nervous.
Yeah. Can I give you just an insane stat for Monte Morris?
Oh, yes, I'm ready.
His turnover percentage of this year?
Always. Always with him.
4.8.
Yeah. He's extreme. He's like just one of the best backup point guards in the league. I wouldn't want him as the starting point guard, I don't think, but he's perfect in that role.
Right. Oh, but, God.
It's, yeah, no, he's super good. I mean, for the Nuggets, who, again, are coming off of a run to the Western Conference Finals, and, you know, a lot of people had them figuring the Lakers would kind of go work their way back in slowly. Who knows, with the Clippers under Ty Lue, that could have led to a slow start as well. I saw a number of people putting the Nuggets as their number one team in the Western Conference in terms of regular season record. Not off to a great start, to say the least, but where's your concern level for them moving forward?
So, playoff team, they will be, because Nikola Jokic will drag them to the playoffs by his damn self, and he does have Jamal Murray next to him, who is finally playing bubble basketball again. Mm-hmm. So I think they have a pretty high baseline just with those two. And then you add in, I still look at Michael Porter as a bit of a wild card. Like, he's played four games this year. I don't know if his 20.7 rebound average is going to maintain. Plus, like, the dude is shooting 57% from the field. That's probably going to drop a little bit.
Sure.
So the thing for me is, what happens at around game 40, 45. Where is this team by then? Do they have a set rotation? Is there enough talent in that set rotation? Do they have enough talent to, you know, make a run as they did in the bubble? Can they make a finals run? I have my level of skepticism is higher this year than it was last year, just in terms of their championship probabilities. But they'll be in the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of phrasing it. Like, I think I wouldn't put them in the tier with the Clippers and the Lakers anymore.
Oh, no. No, no, no. No. Of course not. Like, the Lakers, I think, is like a tier on their own, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, I think the Clippers are a pretty clear number two at this point. But where would you put them in relation to, let's say, the Phoenix Suns, who are at 5-2 right now?
Oh, that's a good question. No, I probably... So see, now I'm convincing myself of otherwise. That's a good one. Like, I would normally say, you know, Denver above them, but the thing is that the Suns have so many avenues now. Mm-hmm. And Mikal Bridges is just ridiculously good. Where would I put them? I might have to go Phoenix right now. Also because it seems like their defense is sustainable. I don't know. I think I might actually go Phoenix, which sounds insane when you consider how we talked about them just a year ago. But no, I think I'm going to go Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, I asked that question not having a good answer myself. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that probably says more about Phoenix, honestly, than it does the Nuggets. I think it's just that I believe that much in what the Suns are doing this year, and we'll probably get to them next episode. But
right,
you know, even put the Nuggets like against the Jazz, who they barely beat in the playoffs last year in the first round without.
I'm going Denver against the Jazz though.
Okay, even yeah, not, I mean
Jokic, they, Jokic. Yeah. That's the Jokic factor. That's the individual matchup factor.
That's right.
Yeah, like if they were to meet each other in the playoffs, I think Jokic would just he's so versatile, and I don't even blame Rudy Gobert for not having a handle on him because it's Jokic. But if you ask me, like, who would have the better regular season, like, I could see that being Utah. But mm-hmm. if they were head to head in a playoff series, I would probably go Denver.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jokic, again, you said this before we started recording, but like, if the Nuggets were 4-2 instead of 2-4, he'd be getting early MVP buzz. He was playing that well.
Yeah, we didn't even read his stat line. He's like, we were talking about 22 points, 11 rebounds, and 13 assists per game. And here's the thing. I understand that his 62% field goal percentage is going to go down a little bit.
Sure.
But I honestly don't think it will go down that much.
Yeah, he's not Joel Embiid, where he takes a ton of inefficient shots. I mean, he's been above 50% for his career every year. And he did, you know, in a smaller role in 2016-17, he did shoot almost 58% across an entire season.
Yeah, and it's more than that. It's just him understanding what a good shot is, and he's just... He's clever, man, and he's gotten so good right near the basket as well. Like last year, he was at 72% shooting from within 3 feet. Mm-hmm. This year, it's gone up to 76, and I kind of think that's sustainable. But what he's always been really good at is hitting that secondary shot, like the 3 to 10 feet, like the small push shots and like the flip shots and like whatever have you. And he's doing that again this year, hitting over 63%. Like those, I could see be sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I'm not concerned about the Nuggets like you. I think they're clearly a playoff team. I think they're going to get better as the year goes on. But are they a real threat to the Lakers or the Clippers right now? It doesn't feel like that. I mean, I probably would have said that last year too, though. So, you know, there's still plenty of season to go before we can make any definitive conclusions either way.
If they trade for Bradley Beal, though.
That would do it. Or what if they could they be in the mix for Kyle Lowry? Even I know Jamal Murray is technically a point guard, but
is he though? Because I kind of think he's not in that same sense. Jokic is their point guard.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Lowry would be good there. Another candidate, and they sniffed around him last year too. Zach LaVine?
Yeah. The problem is they have to get, like, Gary Harris has to have, if not negative trade value, no positive trade value at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's negative because the word on Harris, and we've heard it repeatedly from so many sources that we know, is that he's just such a good guy. Like, he's a locker room guy. He's extremely kind, extremely nice. Everyone loves him. So I think from that perspective, he's just a tremendous asset for any organization. So they kind of look at it going, okay, personality-wise, A++++. On court-wise, at least this year, it's like an F-. So,
right.
You know, we balance it all out and call it just an even trade value. You have no trade value.
Yeah, and the problem for the Nuggets is that, I mean, Michael Porter is their, you know, their shiny, if we're going to trade for a superstar, every team is going to ask for him. But now he's being forced to play such a big role that it's not just like a, here's a mystery box player, you're gambling on the upside. It's like, oh crap, we're losing our third leading scorer. We really need to replace him with someone good. But they just don't have as many, you know, without Michael Porter Jr., they don't have as many mystery box players.
Right.
Like, they have RJ Hampton and Zeke Nanji and Bol Bol. I know Nuggets folks are really high on his long-term
upside. They do have PJ Dozier. And I brought him up last year, and you laughed in my face, you coward. and I said he could be something, and I think he's on the pathway to becoming something. So I think he could be one of those box players.
That's fair, I guess, but what is he... Is he on a contract beyond this year?
That is the question. I don't think he is. That is fair. I do think this is the last year, or maybe he's even on a two-way, right? No. Converted to a regular contract. Okay.
Yeah.
That's weird. I'm actually not finding his contract information. Let me just go check. I am fairly sure he's up after this year.
Yeah. Well, and that would be some of the concern. It's like not, I mean, this is what you've gone back to with the Nuggets time and again, and I think it's a fair criticism. When they were at last year's trade deadline, they had a lot more, like, that was the time for the consolidation trade. Like, Malik Beasley was that piece where you know you're not going to re-sign him, but he's still a high upside prospect. So he could have been that, you know, the piece for, we'll trade you Gary Harris or Will Barton, a salary filler, plus Malik Beasley, plus Bol Bol, and these are the big assets that you're getting back for a trade.
Right.
They just don't have those types of guys anymore. Like, Monte Morris, I guess. I mean, I think there would be a lot of teams that would want to trade for him, but I think he's also pretty pigeonholed in that role. I don't think teams would look at him and be like, oh, this guy's got a ton of upside as a 35-minute-a-game starter.
Yeah, no, he's best as a backup. And by the way, Dozier has another year.
Okay, there you go. Well, PJ Dozier is going to land in Bradley Beal. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's wrap up with the Washington Wizards, who were really taking on water early in the year. They lost a close one against Philly to start, then two to the Magic, two to the Bulls to start 0-5. They have since bounced back, beating the townsless Timberwolves. And last night, they got a squeaker over the Brooklyn Nets. 123-122, which is by far their best win. With Russell Westbrook. Yeah, by far their best win of the season. Where is your concern level?
Super high. Super high. Look, I've watched them plenty this year, and it's just not looked good. I mean, it's just been no energy, a very little fight to them. Like, the Bulls games, the Bulls weren't playing well. They could have had those games, but they just didn't. They were passive, disinterested. Like, Russell Westbrook was super pissed after the first loss, like, and you thought, okay, he's coming back with something good. No. I mean, I think he actually missed that game, now I'm thinking about it, didn't he?
I believe so, if it was a back-to-back. Oh, no, he didn't. He missed the Timberwolves game.
That was the one. It was the Timberwolves after that, and it was the Orlando game I was thinking about, because they played back-to-back with Orlando in one of those games. But either way, then who the hell missed it? Or someone who missed a game. I just remember watching that game and going, like the second one, and going, there's just no fight there. There's nothing. Like, they're just extremely passive. And they have good players. Like, Denny Avdija is legitimately good. He really is. Rui Hachimura, legitimately good. Thomas Bryant, he's probably a year away from being someone you mention as an all-star candidate. Like, he's that guy. Davis Bertāns, I mean, we've brought him up plenty on this podcast. But you know what he can do. He's in an early season struggle, but that's it. Even Raul Neto, who you've been really taking the piss off over the year, is doing well and is a good player. But I'm going to say it. You know where I stand on this. When you bring in a guy like Russell Westbrook, and he takes over so many possessions, and you already have a Bradley Beal who's a 30-point scorer, it's going to cost you on the developmental side.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Isaac Bonga should get more minutes and get more touches. Troy Brown Jr. should get more minutes, should get more touches. Denny Avdija, even though he's starting, should get more minutes. He should definitely get more shots. Rui Hachimura, starting, should be getting more shots. Thomas Bryant, one of the most efficient players in the NBA, should get more shots. Instead, it's all being funneled between two guards who combine to take over 42 shots per game. Like, it's just not smart when you're a young team that wants to be an up-and-comer. Like, we went from, oh, they will be getting something really, really good from Bradley Beal that they can add on to this already intriguing core, to, no, let's pivot. Let's give Bradley Beal some help by getting Russell Westbrook in there. To what end, though?
He is averaging a triple-double, Mort.
Oh, yeah, right. Because triple-doubles, they are a direct conduit to wins. I forgot.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, if you ignore the fact that he's shooting 38.6% from the field, 22.7% from three, and averaging 4.8 turnovers per game, while playing 37.4 minutes. My God.
He's got a true shooting percentage of 45.3. And let me just tell you this. So this is a guy who's averaging a triple-double, but his PER is 15.3.
Yep. He's going to break. I saw someone say this on Twitter. He's going to like break every evaluation model, because someone putting up those types of per-game stats should not be ranking as league average, which a 15 PER is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the efficiency or lack thereof and the turnovers are really dragging him down. Like, I think that PER, despite his per game averages, is a pretty accurate reflection of where he is right now.
Exactly. And PER is deeply flawed. I mean, we've talked about this before, but it's a good, like, one-eye indicator on, oh, okay, where is the guy? That's it. Like, it's you can't put it into something and go, oh, this PER thing, that means everything. No, but it's like, it's a good stat line just to get an idea of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree with you. Like, that fits the eye test for where he is. And I understand. I'm coming off as the constant Russ hater, blah, blah, blah. But look, when you have a team with this talent level in terms of the young core, why would you want to sacrifice that just to have Russell Westbrook on the team? Why would you do that?
Well,
what,
I mean,
what did you hope to gain?
I'm a pretty ardent Russ defender over the years, and I would even say he's been not great to start the year. Like, it's just the same story with him really for the last 5 years, but there have been times where he's dialed it back.
Right.
And lean into his strengths and, you know, reduce some of his weaknesses. Like, how much of this do you think is on Scottie Brooks just enabling him to do the same stuff he always did under Scottie Brooks in OKC?
Yeah, no, that comes back. I mean, he knew all about Russ, so he should be, what's the term I'm looking for here? He should be more aware of how to utilize Russ the correct way, right? I mean, theoretically. And
you would
he hasn't.
Think so.
Yeah, exactly. And he hasn't. So that comes back to Scottie Brooks, I think. I mean, the fact that you can't make it work with a player you know intimately, so in terms of strengths and weaknesses, And you have plenty of experience with Bradley Beal, because how long has Scotty Brooks been there? Like, is this his fourth year? It's fifth.
Oh, wow.
So he knows Bradley Beal pretty well as well. Like, theoretically, he is the most optimized person in the entire world to make this marriage work. And it hasn't worked.
Yeah. Now, I mean, it's early, and we've been stressing that for every team. So, yeah. Again, like, they have had two straight wins. Do you think there is reason for hope that as the season goes on, Russ will take a more deferential role offensively, will start to, you know, enable some of the younger guys, Thomas Bryant, Hachimura, Denny?
Oh my God, how many times? Like, this is the Andrew Wiggins trap again, Brian.
It really is.
But I stepped off of that a long time ago with Russell Westbrook. There are so many guys, so many people, rather, who are just so infatuated with Westbrook and still has that, like, glow going, oh, he might figure it out now. He's only 32. Like, what? No, I don't think so. Like, he didn't even figure it out last year in Houston. When they started winning, that was because Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey tried something completely, and when I say insane, I mean that in the most positive sense, because it was really optimistic. And it worked because they surrounded him with shooters, and they basically played him as an old-school power forward. Like, they didn't ask him to do everything. They asked him, as soon as he got the ball, to just be reactive instead of, you know, be the do-everything guy that every coach otherwise has put him in that role, and he's not good at it. Like, he's not good at it. We've reached that point now where Russell Westbrook is—he's never going to be more than what he is. And when I compare him to Wiggins, remember, I'm not comparing their talent levels. Mm-hmm. Obviously,
yeah.
I mean, there's no debate there. Russ is so far ahead; it's ridiculous. I'm talking about the constant hope of said player turning into more than what he is.
Right. Like, yeah, he just is who he is at this point. And yeah. It's not like he's not going to take this leap into, oh yeah, but if he cuts out these three-pointers and these mid-range shots and, like, only focuses on shots at the rim or layups or anything like that, then All of a sudden he's going to shoot 50% from the field and he's going to be hyper-efficient.
Yeah. Like, when you really look at it, last year in Houston, compared to what Russ did the year before, like, is in his last year in OKC and now his first year in Washington, it was arguably one of his best seasons because it wasn't the triple-double hunt. He was focused on scoring, and he was focused on running down the court. Like, he was aggressive, shot 47% from the field. He took less threes. He got to the free-throw line and actually converted, which I don't know if that was an anomaly, but, like, he did hit 76% from the line. When he plays and a more aggressive style of ball without it being, oh, I'm stat hunting. You can get a good version out of that, but you're also getting a guy who's taking 20 to 22 shots per game. Now, is that efficient for the rest of the roster? I don't think so. Like, Bradley Beal is already taking 22 shots. They're averaging 51 points on a combined 42 shots per game, and I would argue that's not great efficiency.
I don't think you. there's no argument here. It's clearly not great efficiency. Are you concerned at all about Bertans, who is shooting only, 35.0% overall, but that's because almost every one of his shots is from three. But only 32.7 from three. 1 year after he shot 42.4% and got an $80 million contract as a result.
No, I'm actually not super worried because, like I said, I've seen plenty of Washington, and he's just missed some. Like, some of them have been in and outs, and, like, it hasn't been bad shots. Like, this is just him being in a little bit of a shooting funk. That will round out. I am very, very not concerned at all whatsoever when it comes to Bertans. He's just too good of a shooter not to bounce back. It's just been a rough start, and I think he's trying to catch his rhythm. In 2 weeks, I'll bet that those 32%, they're probably 42%.
Yeah, that's fair. How about your Troy Brown Jr. MIP pick? How are you feeling about that?
No, I feel horrible about that. I absolutely do, because and I feel badly for Troy, because this is what I said when I picked him. I said that's my concern. It is when Russell Westbrook comes in that Troy Brown Jr. is not going to get the minutes, he's not going to get the touches, and he hasn't. Now, here's what I will say. When he has gotten minutes and when he has gotten touches, he hasn't done anything with them. So that's not on Westbrook's plate. That's on Troy Brown mm-hmm. Jr. to make the most of the opportunities that he's being given. But yeah, it's not been pretty. The whole symmetry in Washington is off, and that's probably not a good way to go about developing young talent. Like, this is a guy who could have been can still be an outstanding all-around player. He's got a lot of potential, and he's just not being utilized at all, which makes me wonder if Washington is so hell-bent on going into the win-now ideology that he and other pieces might get moved to the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's more like you can point to Russ as a symptom of this, but I think a lot of this goes back to Scottie Brooks.
Yeah.
I mean, or maybe, you know, it could be the front office or the team owner who's kind of forcing his hand and pushing him into win-now mode. But, like, agreed. Russell Westbrook isn't telling Scottie Brooks, you have to play me for 37 minutes a game. That's Scottie Brooks' decision. He could yep. be playing Russ for 32 minutes a game and playing Troy Brown for, you know, 23, 24. Like, just reallocate those minutes. Like,
yep.
I mean, here's a fun fact about Russell Westbrook. The Wizards' offense has been better without him. It's 111.6 without him per 100, 108.7 with him. So, again, it's super early, and I think as when you're incorporating a high-usage piece like Russ, it's going to take time, naturally, for all of these guys to find their groove. But, I mean, defensively, you still have the same, like, he just totally spaces out on some possessions.
Yeah.
And that's just been his MO for a while now. I mean, I'm with you. I think if the Wizards want to prove to Bradley Beal that they have a core moving forward that they can win with, they need to actually let their young guys play. It's like what we were talking about with Miami and Tyler Hero earlier.
Right.
Like, if you don't let Troy Brown play or get into a rhythm, you're not going to know what he can bring to the table and whether he can actually be a long-term piece of this puzzle. I mean, like, Denny and Rui, it's great that those guys are starting and, you know, both have looked good so far. That's encouraging. Mm-hmm. But you need to see more out of that, or else Bradley Beal's going to get an itchy trigger finger. And he's going to say, you know, he's going to look at this team in 2 months, and if they're way out of the playoff race, or if they're, you know, barely hanging on in the play-in tournament race, again, he's up in 2022, and he's going to start wondering, like, am I going to waste the rest of my prime on this team? Should I start to clamor for a trade?
Right. Yeah. It's not pretty in Washington.
No.
It'll be a little bit prettier by January 20th.
Let's hope. Let's hope. Well, that's a good place for us to wrap up, Mort. So thank you all for listening. As always, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And remember, get 20% off and free shipping with the code NBAPOD, that is NBAPOD, at manscaped.com. That is 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the code NBAPOD. Your balls will thank you. On that note, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.